To Epiphany Sunday 2021. Our brief breakout times is but one way in which to catch a glimpse of each other, to invite each other into our homes, even for just a few moments, and to hear of the light and shadows that have inhabited our lives this past week. Be blessed as you meet each other this morning for a few minutes.
Sorry, Robert, you're muted.
I'm sorry, I thought I had been unmuted. I will start again. Unless you were good at reading my lips. Epiphany. It was only 5 weeks ago that we began this journey. We have traveled through biblical texts, children's thoughts, songs, words, music, and prayers. We have traveled with anticipation and apprehension, lightly, yet burdened, quickly, yet one step at a time, hopefully, yet wondering. We have tried to immerse ourselves in a story that we know so very well, while at the same time being immersed in our world that for months has pulled us back and forth between fear and hope and all kinds of other opposing places. We have come to the end, at least of this part of the ecclesial calendar. Epiphany, doesn't that mean a sudden realization, like a bolt out of the blue? Doesn't it mean a sudden resolution? Or does the vague become clear gradually? In a few minutes, we will hear Isaiah say, "Arise, shine, for your light has come." And then Matthew, "Where is the one who has been born? We saw a star and have come." And then the psalmist, "Give the gift of wise rule to the king." Those are brilliant moments. But each is preceded by a long road. The epiphany didn't just drop out of the sky. It came gradually, cumulatively, hardly noticed, but when it did, it was recognized. Maybe that is a little more like our experience. The hope is nurtured on the road. The arrival becomes clear. At the arrival, Epiphany. Let's listen again to the words and the music and the reflections of this morning. God of our way, God of our hope, stay with us in our journey. Bring us to your light. Amen.
Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shining far through shadows dim, giving the life for those who long have gone, guiding the wise men on their place where Jesus lay. Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shine on. Oh, beautiful star, the hope of life, guiding the pilgrims through the night, over the mountains till the break. It will give out a lovely ray. Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shine on. Oh, beautiful star. Star of Bethlehem, shine on. Oh, beautiful star, the hope, the grace, for the redeemed, the good and blessed. Yonder in glory when the crowd is one, Jesus is now brighter he will shine. Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shine on. Oh, beautiful star. Give us a lamp to light the way unto the land of perfect day. Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shine on. Oh, beautiful star of Bethlehem, shine on.
Can you hear me? Many candles have been lit in this Advent and Christmas season. They have been lit in our homes to mark Advent Sundays, to celebrate a birth, a birthday, to light our celebrations, to lighten up a long and dark evening, to remember a loved one. The Christmas candle was lit at our Christmas Eve service. So why light it again on Epiphany? Of all the Christmas time holy days in the church calendar, Epiphany is a festival of light. At Epiphany, we remember the long journey of the Magi. We remember the star from the east, its radiance and its constancy. We remember that the Magi were persistent, focused, and intentional in reaching their destination. As we light the Christmas candle one last time at the end of the season of Christmas, may it remind us of the journey we have traveled and of the path we continue on. May it cast warm and fresh light on the road ahead. May its glow nurture our hope and guide our commitment to walk in the way. Christ, be our light. Shine in our hearts, shine through the darkness. Christ, be our light, make us your living voice.
Looking back over the past year, I'm not sure I can say I've had a new epiphany, a powerful religious experience, or a real revelatory manifestation of a divine being. But I have drawn on one that happened several years ago, which comes to me in moments of darkness, perhaps because I had this epiphany in the darkness, and it was powerful. At the time, I was experiencing some significant life crises, and I felt very alone at times. It was a very dark, still, and moonless night as I sat alone on the edge of a lake in the middle of nowhere, Ontario. The sky was full of stars, and it was so, so big, and I felt so, so small. I remember wanting to feel the presence of God, but feeling nothing. In my aloneness, I found myself saying out loud toward the night sky, "Here I am, here I am, here I am, here I am." I was saying to God, "Look at me, I'm not hiding. I'm out in the open, come and find me." And as I was saying this over and over and over again, I began to hear a different voice. It wasn't my voice anymore, but a tangible voice, first in the distance and then getting closer and closer, saying to me, "I am here, I am here, I am here." And as this voice became louder and closer, I began to feel absolutely enveloped in the arms of something much bigger than I was. I was in this voice. It is hard to put into words what I felt at that moment, but I have drawn on it many times since, and certainly during this past year, as I have witnessed the loneliness and sadness of those who feel defeated, have experienced loss, and have struggled during a difficult and isolating time. That voice comes to me saying, "I am here." And I remember that God is always present in our loneliness, isolation, and pain. That voice is in us, and we are in that voice. And that is profoundly comforting.
So I guess in this season of remoteness for so many of us and new experiences and adjusting and pivoting, for me, it's been a confirmation of how integral human contact is for my health and for the health of those around me. I've missed the energy of meeting face to face with new clients and being able to read the micro emotions that are on their faces as they respond to really pivotal questions in identifying new directions for them. I've missed the energy of that interaction. I've missed the squeeze of my kids' hugs and my new grandkid saying so much more to me and to the people they hug than, "Hi, Mom." That hug expresses so much more, and I miss that a lot. I've missed the easy laughter and relaxed catching up with friends, sitting around in a group and reacquainting ourselves with where families are at. And I realize that the side splitting, oxygen sucking, chortling laughter with friends is a vital part of feeding my own energy and hope for looking forward. And I miss that a lot. This season has made me thankful for knowing what I miss, because I know it will come again. Kind of like the reality of faith is knowing that it too will come again, even in the times that it's challenged, and even in the times when it feels like it's gone. We will greet again, we will hug again, and we will laugh again.
Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you. See, the darkness covers the earth, and thick darkness is over the peoples. But the Lord rises upon you, and his glory appears over you. Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look about you, all assemble and come to you. Your sons come from afar, and your daughters are carried on the arm. Then you will look and be radiant. Your heart will throb and swell with joy. The wealth on the seas will be brought to you. To you, the riches of the nations will come. Herds of camels will cover your land, young camels of Midian and Ephah, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord.
I don't think I've experienced anything that could be called an epiphany, but there are a few things that have come more clearly into focus this year and in the last couple of months. One being the resilience of our friends and family and their ability to creatively extend and receive joy and love. COVID-19 limited our plans and activities this year, as it has for many of you. As we canceled plans and bookings, we began to wonder when we'll be able to travel again and see some of our old friends. We became more aware of the time we may have remaining to do such things. While time is limited for all of us, I have the dubious advantage of having a little more information than most people. I have been on a journey living with a chronic illness for 17 years, but lately it is taking up a little more room in my life as it progresses and treatment options have become fewer. The focus has sharpened, and some things have come clearer in the last few months.
I have come to some realizations this December. They aren't new, but they are really hitting home to me now. It's an amazing fact that despite the size of the tumor invading Dave's rib, he has no pain. Conversations with his oncologists make it clear that this is unusual. He's going to have radiation on this rib starting January 11th to hopefully prevent extreme discomfort in the coming months. But what I take from this, from the fact that he has no pain, is that it's an answer to prayer. How else could this be? Also, it has become more clear that it is important that Dave and I and our children are together in this. We watch over each other and support each other. We are so fortunate.
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
I think that's my turn, is it?
No, not quite yet.
Sorry.
A sudden realization, seeing God revealed? I certainly cannot think of any such thing obviously happening in the recent Advent season. Has there been an epiphany the past year? Nothing stands out. Mostly I felt what many of us have felt, a sense of disorientation, of losing my footing, and then losing my sense of self. I've sat in denial, keeping my focus small and doing the next thing on the list. And I've recognized that denial and worked at letting it go, or letting go of it. And I've worked at slowly coming to terms with what I'm avoiding. I've had to admit that I need people more than I realize, and that I'm not that good at making deliberate connections with people. I've had to admit that it would be in my best interest to work again at relationships with my body. My recent experience with cancer has led to some mistrust between me and my body, and what I thought was a well-established exercise routine has evaporated. I felt my shoulders curling in and my joints stiffening. I also once believed that I had a rich spiritual life, but now I find myself reaching for distractions over and over, and justifying them by telling myself I deserve a small break. Teaching my students through Teams, which is like Zoom, and seeing my own face on the screen was new and scary and so much hard work. I had to admit to them over and over that I did not know what I was doing. Teaching a class with the students sitting 2 meters apart, always sitting 2 meters apart, has also been a challenge. Kids learn better when they can move through the room and work collaboratively. How do I compensate for that? As I think about this further, I realized that I have been accessing the courage I need to face these things through prayer. At this point in my journey, I direct most of my prayers to the host of angels I believe travel with me. When I ask for courage, I do always find some small thread of it. As I think about Epiphany and reflect on this last year, I see that I could possibly tap into that courage to work on what I can barely admit is important to me, my relationships with my body, my spirit, and my people.
Good morning, everyone. From Advent through Christmas to Epiphany is a contemplative road for me. I think it is for many of us. Small, iconic symbols, ideas, settings, art facilitate this contemplation and self-reflection for me. Whether it's soft seasonal music to accompany this time or candles like this one delivered by the social committee. Dark spaces surrounding the light as if to focus the frontiers of one's life on the road toward radiance. And stories to bear the scope of this road's journey. This morning I want to share a story, trusting it to contribute to our self-reflection. It's a melodrama, perhaps the unsophisticated cousin of the literary family. But like the unsophisticated cousin, if brief, it can be effective. This story is not a thorough Christology, theology of Messiah. This is not a thorough theology of salvation or angels, and it most certainly is not social commentary. This story is for contemplation, for self-reflection, reflection on that which radiates around and within us, including at the dim reaches of the light's radiance. And so the story is called The Secret of the Gifts. Paul Fluck is its author. The story has been told for centuries, the story of Gaspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, and the gifts they brought to the newborn Christ. How they saw the star and followed it for weeks across mountain and valley and desert. Upon their swaying beasts they came and placed their treasures at the feet of the infant. And what were their gifts? Ah, you say everyone knows that. They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So, since the earliest days, the story has been told. But the story is incomplete. You see, the story was told by those who had seen the Magi on their journey, by those who stood by in wonderment as they dismounted their weary camels and strode to the entry of the crude stable. They watched as the Magi held their jeweled cases before them. That much the world saw, and so the story has been told. But that's not the whole story, and if you listen carefully, you will hear the rest of it. You'll hear what happened when the Magi entered the stable, and you'll learn the secret of the gifts. The first of the three visitors to approach the stable was Gaspar. His cloak was of the finest velvet, trimmed in flawless fur. At his waist and throat were clusters of gems. Gaspar was a wealthy person. Those who watched saw only that he paused at the entry. "He prays," they whispered to one another as they saw Gaspar's lips move. But they were mistaken. They could not see that it was the angel Gabriel before whom Gaspar stopped. "And who are you?" The voice was firm, but not unkind. "I am Gaspar, and I am come to worship the king." "All who enter must bring a gift. Have you a gift?" "Indeed I have." He held aloft a finely wrought box. It was small, but so heavy that his arms could hardly raise it. "I have brought bars of the purest gold." "Your gift must be the essence of yourself. It must be something precious to your soul." "Such have I brought," Gaspar spoke confidently, the hint of a smile upon his lips. "So it shall be." And he too smiled as he held the door for Gaspar to enter. And there before the rough board wall of the stable lay the king as he traveled so far to see. The light of the lamp fell across the tiny face and glinted back from the dark, bright eyes. In the shadows sat the parents, motionless and silent. Beyond them, Gaspar sensed the presence of sheep and oxen who stood their reverent watch. Gaspar advanced a step and then another. He was just about to kneel and lay his gold before the child when he stopped and stood upright. There in his outstretched hands lay not gold, but a hammer. Its scarred and blackened head was larger than a fist. Its handle was of sinewy wood, as long as a forearm. But, so shall it be, and so it is. You have brought the essence of yourself. A hammer? What foul magic is this? None but the magic of truth, the angel said. What you hold in your hands is the hammer of your greed. You have used it to pound wealth from those who labor so that you may live in luxury. You have used it to build a mansion for yourself while others dwell in hovels. You have raised it against friends and made them into enemies, and against enemies to destroy them. Suddenly, Gaspar knew the truth. Bowed, he turned toward the door to leave, but the angel blocked his way. No, you have not offered your gift. Give this? I cannot give this to a king. But you must. This is why you came. And you cannot take it back with you. It is too heavy. You've carried it for many years, and even now your arms ache with its weight. You must leave it here, or it will destroy you. And once again, Gaspar knew that the angel spoke the truth. Still, he protested, "This hammer is too heavy. The child cannot lift it." "He is the only one who can lift it. But it is dangerous. He might bruise his hands or feet." "That worry you must leave to heaven. The hammer shall find its place." Slowly, Gaspar turned to where the Christ child lay, and slowly he placed the ugly hammer at his feet. Then he rose and turned to the door, pausing only for an instant to look back before he rushed outside. The waiting world saw only the smile on Gaspar's face as he emerged from the stable. His hands were raised as though the wings of angels graced his fingers. That much the world saw, and so the story is told. Next to step to the door of the stable was the learned Melchior. He was not so resplendent as Gaspar. He wore the darker robes of the scholar. The length of his beard and the furrows of his brow bespoke one who had lived long with the wisdom of the ages. A hush fell over the onlookers as he too paused before the door. But only Melchior could see the one who stood guard. Only Melchior could hear him speak. "What have you brought?" "I bring frankincense, the fragrance of hidden lands and bygone days." "Your gift must be something precious to your soul." "Of course, it is." "Then enter and we shall see." And Gabriel opened the door. Melchior stood breathless before the scene within. In all his many years of searching for elusive truth, he had never sensed such a presence as this. Reverently, he knelt. From beneath his robes, he withdrew a silver flask of precious ointment, but then he drew back and stared. The vessel was not silver at all. It was common clay, rough and grained, as might be found in the humblest cupboard. Aghast, he pulled the stopper from its mouth and sniffed the contents. Then he leapt to his feet, only to face the angel at the door. "I have been tricked. This is not the frankincense I brought." "What is it then?" "It is vinegar." "So shall it be, and so it is. You have brought what you are made of. You are an angel of fools. You bring the bitterness of your heart, the soured wine of a life turned grim with jealousy and hate. You have carried within you too long the memory of old hurts. You have hoarded your resentments and breathed on sparks of anger until they have become as embers smoldering within you. You have sought for knowledge, but you have filled your life with poison. As he heard these words, Melchior's shoulders drooped. He turned his face away from Gabriel and fumbled with his robe as though to hide the earthen jar. Silently, he moved toward the door. "Wait, you must leave your gift." "How I wish I could. How long have I yearned to empty my soul of its bitterness. You have spoken the truth, my friend, but I cannot leave it here. Not here, at the feet of love and innocence. You can, and you must, if you would be clean. This is the only place you can leave it. But this vile and bitter stuff, what if the child should touch it to his lips? You must leave that worry to heaven. There is a use even for vinegar. So Melchior placed his gift before the child, and they say that when he came out of the stable, his eyes shone with the clearest light of heaven's truth. His skin was as smooth as a youth's, and he lifted his face to gaze on horizons he had never seen before. And in that, at least, the story is correct. There was yet one more visitor to make his offering. He strode forward, his back as straight as a tree, shoulders firm as an oaken beam. He walked as one born to command. This was Balthazar, leader of many legions, scourge of walled cities. Before him, as he grasped it by his handle of polished ebony, he carried a brass-bound box. A murmur ran through those who watched as they saw him hesitate before the door. "Look," they whispered. "Even the great Balthazar does obeisance before the king who waits within." But we know who it was that caused the warrior to pause, and we know, too, the question that he put. "Have you a gift?" "Of course. I bring a gift of myrrh, the most precious booty of my boldest conquest. For centuries, many have fought and died for such as this. It is the essence of the rarest herb." "But is it the essence of yourself?" "It is." "Then come, and we shall see." Even the fearless Balthazar was not prepared for the wave of awe that struck him as he entered the holy place. He felt a weakness in his knees such as he had never known before. Closing his eyes, he knelt and shuffled forward through the straw in reverence. Then bowing until his face was near the ground, he slowly released his grip upon the handle of the box. Balthazar raised his head and opened his eyes. What lay before him at the child's feet was his own spear. Its smooth, round staff glistened where the sweat of his palms had moistened it. The razor edges of its steely tip caught the flickering light of the lamp. "It cannot be. Some enemy has cast a spell." "That is more true than you know. 1,000 enemies have cast their spell on you and turned your soul into a spear. Do you think I like to kill? You angels know nothing of this world. I'm the defender of my people. Were it not for my spear leading them in battle, we would have been destroyed long ago." The angel paused before he spoke. "Living only to conquer, you have been conquered." For a moment, Balthazar hesitated. Then, taking control of himself, he reached down and grasped his spear and turned toward the door. "I cannot leave this here. My people need it. We cannot afford to give it up." "Are you sure you can afford to keep it?" A long moment passed. Finally, Balthazar loosed his grip and the spear drooped toward the floor. "But here? Is it safe to leave it here?" "This is the only safe place to leave it." "But he is a child, and the spear is sharp. It could pierce his flesh." "That fear you must leave to heaven." They say that Balthazar went calmly from the stable, his arms gently hanging at his sides. They say that he walked first to Gaspar and Melchior, where they waited and embraced them as brothers. Then turning to others who watched, he went first to one and then to the next, enfolding each in his outstretched arms as one greeting beloved friends whom he had not seen for a very long time. There is the whole of it, the tale as it has always been told, and more than was visible to standers-by. But what of their gifts, you might ask? What of the hammer, the vinegar, and the spear? Strange gifts to give a child, strange offerings to lay before a king. Well, there's another story about them and how they were seen once more. Perhaps a tale for another time.
A reading from Psalm 72. Give the gift of wise rule to the king, O God, the gift of just rule to the crown prince. May he judge your people rightly, be honorable to your meek and lowly. Let the mountains give exuberant witness, shape the hills with the contours of right living. Please stand up for the poor, help the children of the needy. Come down hard on the cruel tyrants. Outlast the sun, outlive the moon, age after age after age. Be rainfall on cut grass, earth refreshing rain showers. Let righteousness burst into blossom and peace abound until the moon fades to nothing. Rule from sea to sea, from the river to the rim.
Many, many thanks to all the people who participated this morning. Your words were profound, insightful, and encouraging. Your music was uplifting, your technical support invaluable. Ruth Jantz, who participated in Our Own Voices, our apologies for not including your name in the bulletin. Despite our best intentions, there always seems to be some detail that fails and falls through the cracks. This is the first Sunday of the month, and thus it's Offering Sunday. Also, there will be no Sunday school this week, but it will resume next Sunday. It's now our time for sharing. Please state your name when you want to speak, and make sure that you unmute yourself, and then mute yourself again when you're done. Pat Gerber Pauls will conclude our time of sharing with pastoral prayer and a benediction. And following that, there will be opportunity for some conversation. So please state your name if you have something to share.
Hello.
Okay, here's some time to visit. I think Ed's going to keep us open for a while. Hi, Shelby.
Hi.
Hi. Yes.
Do you have a new baby at your house?
Nick, do you get
the food? Yes. Thank you. Thank you. There's several families that helped us out with some meals, and we really appreciate it because we're getting tired of sandwiches and eggs on toast. So that's thanks to Michelle and Rudy Tuick and Sia and John
and Conrad
and Ruth and Reg and Leanne. We really appreciate it. Here is our newest addition, baby Aura. Sorry, I was just having to do a little diaper change. She's just very wee, but I'm just getting ready to feed her as well. But we really wanted to say thanks so much.
Thank you, Ma.
And I just woke up, so
it's okay.
You're looking pretty good for somebody who just woke up.
I just got rolled out of bed with the baby, so I'm really tired.
Yes, I'm sorry, I missed when she was born. What is the birth date?
She was actually born November 30th, but she's been in the hospital.
Oh,
Jackson's a little upset because I'm not holding him at the moment.
I have
two issues. But Jackson needs me to hold him as well. Aura needs me right now. So Aura has a bit of addiction, so we have to monitor food and that sort of thing. So, but she's doing really, really well. She's gaining weight and she's very cute, but she's about to cry right now. She's looking for something to eat. But her name's Aura Grace Marie. Very new age. And kind of neat. We're thinking. But we love her very much. And she's come to live with us the week before Christmas. So we've got two babies now, as Shelby says. Mom, there are two babies, she says.
Mama!
And yes, that's true. We have two. Jackson and his little baby sister. Yeah, there's Jackson. I see you, my bubby. And that's your sister. That's right. That's your sister. So we just wanted to say thanks so much.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, so just a few more details on the food thing is that Drew, the kids have a visit in the city on Mondays and Fridays.
Right.
So drop-off days for food are going to be Monday before noon and Friday before 10. Right, Colleen and Drew?
Yeah, that would work, Colleen. Yeah. Thank you, Michelle.
So,